climb and another river to cross, when a dispute between two men was settled not with expensive lawyers but with fists, knives, or guns. Barbaric? Maybe. But some things never changed. When the cowboy rode into the pages of American history, he left behind a legacy that lives within the hearts of us all. Ralph Compton. Preface. I'm of the notion it was hiding out in a cave down by the Concho River for so long that made Ira Dalton a bit feeble of mind. The only person he spoke to during the entire time was his grandpa, who would occasionally visit in the middle of the night to sneak him flour and beans. Later on, long after he came out of hiding, there would be days when Ira seemed to have most of his wits about him. But there were times he would be reminded of hiding away from these who had come looking for able-bodied young men to join the Confederate Army, and he'd talk to nobody except his dog, which he'd buried after it was bit by a snake and died. My guess is Ira was privately cursing himself for what he later judged cowardly behavior, choosing to hide and continue living rather than fight in a war that got just about every friend he'd known killed by Union soldiers. He'd managed to survive and eventually grow to manhood, but I can't help thinking that deep down his was a life of constant regret. Still, I liked him, and he seemed to take to me, but even with our friendship being what it was, he rarely spoke of the demons that caused him such torment. He did tell me it was just days after his 16th birthday when word came that the Confederate government had decreed it mandatory for all men in Texas to join up. Some who had no taste for fighting quickly fled south of the border into Mexico to avoid the recruiters. At the urging of his grandparents, who had raised him after his mama and daddy were killed in an Indian raid, Ira literally went underground. As a youngster, he'd roamed the black land wilderness surrounding the tiny cotton-farming hamlet of Runnels and was aware of every bend of the river, every peak and valley, even the secluded shelters of the deer and coyotes who roamed the region. High atop a limestone cliff on the river's edge, just over a mile's walk from the Dalton farmhouse, he'd discovered the cave whose entrance was hidden by the tangled growth of mesquites and sagebrush. It was there he'd played countless childhood games, and later it became his full-time hiding place. By day he wouldn't venture outside. Only when nightfall arrived would he fish the river for perch and carp and set traps for the rabbits and squirrels he would cook on a small fire in the deepest corner of his hideaway. He bathed in the river by moonlight. He was alone with nothing but his thoughts and the constant concern he would be found, recording the passage of each day with a mark on the wall of the cave. Ira Dalton became a prisoner of his own fear. Small wonder he didn't go crazy as an outhouse rat. I don't intend that observation in a mean-spirited way, you understand? As I've said, I liked him from the first day I met him in a livery stable in Phantom Hill, where he was cleaning stalls and tending horses in exchange for room and board. He left his hiding place and gone there as soon as his grandpa alerted him that the Confederates had surrendered and the war was over. The only thing he owned was a mule named Bill that he'd left home on. His dog, whose name I can't recall, followed along. But then he was 20, going on 21, tall and skinny as a rail. The thing that struck me the first time I met him was that he had the saddest eyes I'd ever seen. I'll tell you more about him later, but for now, what I want you to know before you go reading any further is this. Ira Dalton was no coward, not by a long shot. If not for him, I'd not be around to tell this story. He saved my life.
Part 1. Chapter 1. Coy Jennings was limping almost as badly as his horse when, in the distance, he saw chimney smoke lazily climbing into the clear morning sky. From a small rise, he could see a couple of clapboard buildings, a few small houses, and a lengthy row of tents. The wind carried the sounds of people as they hurried about, dogs barking, a rooster crowing, and a steady clanging of a blacksmith's hammer. Phantom Hill didn't look like much of a town. "I reckon if we don't fall flat on our faces," he said to the hobbling bay, "we're going to make it." The trip took far longer than